I must admit, when we do takeovers and you're cleaning the lines at 8 o'clock in the morning, you try some interesting beers. Yeah. So I wouldn't say this is out of the norm.
Sessionable.
Welcome to Sessionable. We got a pretty special episode today. We're on location, Sessionable on location, at probably one of our favourite pubs. We've recommended it a few times, I think. The Royal Albert Hotel. And we're joined by Mick, the owner and licensee of the place. Welcome to the show, Mick.
How are you guys?
Good, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah. Thank you for letting us in the building.
I've let you in a few times.
We should mention as well that it's like 9:30 in the morning. I think it's the earliest we've recorded an episode.
I'm fairly hungover as well. Yeah. This is hair of the dog for me. I think it's the earliest I've started drinking in a long time.
Yeah. I'm not going to say it's the earliest I've started drinking.
It's what happens when you get older.
Yeah. So we'll just quickly say what we're drinking. We've got, we've just cracked open 2 cans of the Mountain Goat Fancy Pants.
2 cans each.
Yeah, in the morning. And we're shotgunning them. We're just like,
yeah.
No one's going to see that. So. So we might drink that. But before we do, I've got a list of stuff to talk about, don't I? So we might just get you to tell us a bit about yourself and the Royal Albert, Mick, if that's...
Obviously, we bought the pub 3 years ago. And obviously, when we bought the pub, it was a very... mainstream sort of dirty old man's pub, and basically the taps consisted of VB, Carlton Draft, Tui's New, Resch's, and probably Cooper's being literally the only Australian-owned beer on there. And then progressively over the first 12 months, we made a very strategic decision to go Aussie craft and craft, which was an interesting learning curve. So obviously we lost a lot of our old locals because... Reshes and things like that weren't on tap anymore.
Yeah.
And so we saw a bit of a dip in business, but ever since then, we've never really looked back. Now at the moment, we've got 10 taps and then we're going to 14. But it's just been good. Like, being a craft beer venue just changes things, just changes the demographic. You know, people are a lot more sociable. You know, a lot of people... didn't even want to drink in the front bar before. It just wasn't a pleasant place to be. So, you know, locals just thinking they own the pub and stuff like that, whereas now it's more about the beer and obviously the introduction of the dumpling bar and obviously our burgers and stuff have made a huge difference to the pub. So, yeah, it's been good fun. And I've learnt an awful lot, obviously, in the last 12 months, 2 years, about what's especially happening in the beer scene and, where it's still going and growing at a huge rate of knots now.
So what were you doing before the Albert?
So before the Royal Albert, I was a group food and beverage manager for Keystone. So I did open a lot of big pubs that were like Foster's and Lion Nathan contracted. Well, that was Foster's. It was all Carlton contracts, like bars like Cargo Bar, Bungalow 8.
Yep.
Opened the Sugar Mill and the Cross. All the wineries. But sort of my taste, one of the pubs that we did have at the time was the Aussie in the Rocks, which was one of the first sort of, I guess you'd call beer pubs. I mean, the taps were still contracted up, but, we did have 100 bottles in the fridge and stuff like that. And we obviously, and I started the Australian Beer Festival in the Rocks as well.
Really? Wow. I think the Aussie's been, at that point in time, it was like, a very formative place, I think, for the
city. Oh, absolutely. From my experiences, like, we were bringing Little Creatures over from WA at that time when it was independent. And, we had all sorts of problems with it coming across and over-carbonating and stuff like that and just pouring heady and stuff like that because no one was sort of bringing that sort of beer across from WA. It was all fun and games at the time. So, but it was good. Yeah, I mean, look, the Aussie definitely, I think, sort of set the trend, and then obviously things like the Tap House and stuff like that came along a bit later on. But everyone's taken it to a different level, I think.
Yeah, I think sort of the Aussie Beer Fest has also been a blueprint for a lot of places as well.
Yeah, I think it did start in Melbourne though, like, because we did go down to St Kilda and stuff like that for that beer festival.
Yeah.
To check that out before we rolled out the Aussie Beer Festival. Yeah. So, I think Melbourne definitely led the charge. I think Sydney's just coming over the top and having a go, which is good.
Yeah.
Now, a big thing of, like, big part of what you do here is those regular, you know, Thursday tap takeovers. What has your experience been with, like, the reception of them and the beers you've been getting? And
yeah, well, I mean, we did it. Our first one was sort of almost 2.5-3 years ago when we did. Because a friend of mine actually is one of the owners of Young Henry's, and they asked us to do a tap takeover, and I'd never done it before. But it was awesome. From the first one we did, I just went, yeah, look, this is the way to go, because it's, for us being a small pub, and only having 10 taps, we can have the ability to showcase a whole brewery. Yeah. And the people it brought in, because they'd missed, because there's so many venues and they're all spread out and all have different taps, to have all those beers in one venue on one night at a reasonable price, just, yeah, it opened up a whole can of worms for us, because we were just like, the people that brought in, people that follow the brewery, you know, beer geeks and lovers and stuff like that, as well as just general punters just wanting to check out different breweries. It was just awesome.
So at that time, it wasn't actually that easy to get some Young Henry's, was it?
Yeah, well, no, especially not out of the inner west. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it was only the tap house that I'd sort of heard of.
Yeah.
Previous to that, really doing tap takeovers, and from what I've been told, I believe that the tap house was one of the first ones to do it. And I just think it's a great idea.
Yeah,
it just works for us. And then, you know, now we'd probably be, I don't know, maybe 20, 25 tap takeovers. Like, I don't know, I've lost count. I couldn't. Yeah. I'd have to write them down. But.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think how many I've been to.
There'd be a few.
Yeah.
Let's say at least half.
Yeah. Oh, we've got some more than that. Have you found like the beer nerd crowd? I know we're all part of that crowd, and like, have you found like the support or?
Yeah, well, I think it's good. Yeah, I mean, obviously, the spreading the word through those sort of people, like, you know, people like yourself that really get amongst the industry, both. It's almost like I find you guys as like a middle ground, because it's like a lot of you guys have got great relationships with the brewers and breweries, as well as other punters in a broader range. But especially when you look at social media, like if I post something, you guys are the ones that pick it up and help me push it out there as well. So it's almost like a bit of an extra voice. You know, which I wouldn't really have access to, but it's just good to see everyone so passionate about it. You know, it's quite funny listening to you guys argue between yourselves over different beers. It's quite funny from the other side of here. Everyone's got their own opinion, which is great, and that, I think that's what it's all about. So
I think as long as it's all positive,
you listen to some of the argument. Well, let's not call it arguments. Let's call it discussions. Some of them may be a little more heated than others,
especially as the night goes on.
You know, it's just. Interesting to hear everyone's opinion, you know, like some people think that, you know, the international beers are better than the Aussie beers, and you know, I think most of us agree that, you know, the Aussie beers are all stepping up to the mark.
Oh, yeah,
so
definitely.
You know, there's always different points of, you know, that people have on different things. So
Speaking of which, it's only been a couple of international tap takers that you've actually had, isn't it?
Yeah, originally I wasn't going to do it, and I did want to stay Aussie, but what I did realise was that I think people do need to see what's happening overseas, and I don't, you know, I mean, obviously a lot of the times it might be price driven, like a lot of these kegs are, you know, double if not triple the price of some of the Aussie stuff, and especially because a lot of the international stuff comes in 30 litres, so the excise is hideous, which a lot of people don't understand. So literally a 30-litre keg's costing you as much as a 50-litre keg.
Is price an important factor for you?
Well, I think so. I think a lot of people these days are probably overcharging a bit for craft.
Yeah.
Because it's the cool new in thing and they know they can make a bit of money off it. But I think in the next 12 months, 2 years, like, you'll see it even out a little bit, I think, because it'll become a little bit more competitive. But at the end of the day, you know, it's... I mean, I'd much rather drink a better beer at a reasonable price and only have one less.
Yeah.
But there's still a lot of people out there that, you know, are doing it tough.
Definitely.
And are price sensitive. So I think it's a bit of a balance between both.
I think as we see a lot of these like craft breweries like scaling up to the point where I think price should become a much more competitive factor for the choice and do I drink Swill or do I drink that decent beer?
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I mean, craft, entry-level craft is not that much, you know, even international entry-level craft is, like Carlton Draft until he's new, aren't that much cheaper.
Yeah, it's funny sometimes.
The gap, I think the gap's closed.
Yeah, it is closed, It's funny how sometimes you look at something and you go, fuck, that's cheaper than a keg of new, or like...
Well, yeah, but I mean, even things like Dan Murphy's having craft now.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can buy a good case of craft for 60, 65, whatever, or a reasonable craft, but, you know, VB Carlton Draft 2 is new are also 45.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, do you want to spend the $10-$20 and drink a better beer? You know, I think a lot more people are going for that choice. But the international stuff, I think it's great to benchmark the Aussie stuff against it.
I agree. I think sometimes, like, as a brewing nation, we need to know what other people are doing to see where we sit sometimes, not to emulate or something, but if we just have our head stuck in the sand, we're not really going to...
But yeah, look, I mean, and everyone's different. Like, I mean, obviously, New Zealand, case in point, like, you know, essentially, I think it's around 10% in New Zealand, the craft beer market, whereas Australia, it's 4%. So, you know, there must be some, you know, well, there is some great breweries in New Zealand.
Oh, no doubt,
And then, obviously, when you look at America, it's just, it's just, you know, some of their craft breweries are as big as our big ones.
But I think, price is another big thing in New Zealand as well. Like, it is a lot more approachable price-wise.
Well, look, from what I've heard, I mean, I haven't been over there for a while, but even, like, Aussie stuff like Coopers is cheaper to buy in New Zealand than it is here.
There's
got to be something. How does that work?
So how do you see, like, the Surrey Hills beer scene and, I guess, the Greater Sydney beer scene, like, kind of developing, and how do you see it now?
Well, I think there's, like, you're going to find even the big group-owned pubs are really going to start to swing to craft. I think they can see, I mean, not only because the big breweries have bought up some craft labels and stuff as well, I think you're going to find that a lot of those bigger ones are all going to come on board as well. But I think there's also, like, restaurants are now getting involved as well. So I think, so you've got the big, you sort of got us in, you know, a class as like small to medium little venues, but then you've got the big groups, you know, like Oscars and stuff starting to get involved in craft in some of their venues. You know, I'm sure the likes of Merivale and Keystone and all that will start to really think about craft and stuff as well. So, you know, which, and that'll be all part of making it, you know, price sensitive and stuff. It'll put a bit of competition into the market. But I think the good thing is you'll be able to, you'll have more choice. You know, you've got little venues like Bit of Few coming on board doing a whole heap of international stuff, you know, which is great.
It's incredible.
You know? So it's just going to balance the market out a little bit more, I think.
I don't think anyone's actually stepping on anyone's toes yet. Like,
I can't see it for a little while. Like, you know, I couldn't see it really in the next 4 or 5 years. Like, it's just, it's growing and people are accepting it. And people are getting involved in it. So, you know, until it gets to that tipping point where there's probably too many, but it'll be the same with breweries, I think, as well. Because it's like, no one's really treading on anyone's toes at the moment. But if there was another 50 breweries in New South Wales to come on board, there'll be some people.
A bit annoying.
It's probably what's happening in the US.
It is, yeah.
It's they've reached saturation point. And a lot of breweries are...
Because I'd say even Melbourne's not close to saturation.
I don't think.
I wouldn't say so.
You know, what do you guys think of the Fancy Pants? So
it's really good.
Pretty good breakfast beer.
It's not... So it wasn't cold when we brought it in.
It's all right,
but I actually
it was actually quite nice
in that temperature,
especially for that amber ale.
It seems a bit of a little bit of a tone down from the bottled version, but I think that kind of works.
I think it works as a canned, like, limited, but not limited, like canned, you know, big release. Because I think is there strategy they're going to do two cans? Kind of like summer ale and winter. I think that's their strategy.
They're not doing summer ale at the moment.
No,
makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, a lot of these breweries, I think they're just testing the market with cans, which is great, because I mean, obviously cans are awesome, but, you know, something like this, which is fairly easy drinking, I think, quite smooth, you know, to have a craft beer in a can, you know, decanted into a glass, happy days.
Yeah.
Exactly. Awesome. So, super fresh and...
Mm. What role did breweries like Mound Goat and Stone & Wood play in like the early days of?
Yeah, well, I mean, they sort of, I mean, obviously they led the way, and you know, and they're still sort of leading the way, like by dumping Summer out, the Summer and Fancy Pants into cans, like, and really getting it out craft into mass market. So they're still sort of leading the way, but you know, when you look at things like Mountain Goat, like everyone knows Mountain Goat,
and
Stone & Wood, like for literally being built off one style of beer that literally everyone has tried at some stage.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably one of the most, you know, and obviously them expanding the brewery, but also not being able to keep up with demand and not really taking on new accounts at the moment, from what I've been told, until the new brewery comes online, is just case in point. Like, you know, I think just things like Mountain Goat Steam, just an awesome, clean, crisp beer that unoffensive, that a lot of craft beer drinkers, well, a lot of normal beer drinkers would easily switch to.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, definitely.
Actually, I gotta say, I don't know if you still have it, but you had the Hightail and Hand Pump.
Yeah.
That was mind-blowing.
Yeah, that was the first time they'd not really done it on a hand pump before.
I think that took that beer to another level.
Yeah, I really agree, which is interesting. So, but I think that Hightail, like, it's that style suits the hand pump.
Ah, definitely.
You know, we've tried pails, we've tried everything through the hand pump, but I think that English style in that middle range, I think, is where it's at.
Yeah, definitely.
Did you find that those kind of very approachable beers helped people get into craft beers?
Yeah, absolutely. And we always, even still now, because we are sort of middle of cool, fashionable Surrey Hills, we can't just rely on craft beer connoisseurs and beer nerds and those sort of things to keep the business going. It's about the general punter as well. And the important thing is just to balance the taps out. And it's always important for us to have two or three reasonably sessionable type beers.
Yeah.
So, you know, a Steam Hail, a Young Henry's Natural Lager, Illawarra Kolsch, and things like Stone & Wood, you know, people know and are comfortable with. And then you can rip into, you know, I mean, obviously we've still got Tokyo and, you know, some crazy stuff on tap, which is, you know, what the balance is all about.
Yeah.
So. But I think overall the clientele of the pub is very much that balance. And it is a bit of a melting pot of, like, you know, you got your beer nerds and fucking thongs and shorts and then the guy in the suit sitting next to you and, like, both having a chat together and,
Yeah, which is good. And, you know, and it's also nice to have the brewers and stuff come down every so often. And, you know, they'll talk to anyone and everyone, which is great, you know, which is what it's all about. So.
Yeah.
All right, so we've poured a second beer. And
also from a can.
Also from a can, but quite a different beer from a can. This is the 6-point high res. We had the resin on the Four Pines episode, I think.
Indeed.
And so this is they've taken the resin and they've literally turned it up to 11. It's 11.1% alcohol, 111 IBU and 11 SRM. So I kind of like that. Yeah.
It's a bit sweet.
It is very sweet. Even on the nose, it's
quite mild
on
the nose. Yeah. Like, it doesn't have
a big hop here, does it?
It's not what I was expecting from like a bigger resin. But I guess like maybe it wasn't really meant to be the same beer.
Yeah, maybe I think like they've scaled up the alcohol without maybe getting the hops more. Like it's obviously hoppier than resin, but because the alcohol's a lot more, I don't think
it doesn't seem to be a lot less.
The sweetness kind of balances
But then after the first sip, at least my tongue just kind of goes numb from the hops.
Yeah, I mean it's pretty bitter. It's like,
but you don't. Yeah, it's not as
doesn't have a big punch. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got an alcohol punch.
Yeah, it's definitely got it. Especially at this time in the morning.
Yeah.
Breakfast. I was going to bring a Founders Breakfast out, but couldn't get my hands on one in time.
Oh, so that's why you didn't bring it.
Yeah.
I thought you didn't bring it because you were being sensible.
But... Yeah, so I brought this instead. Yeah.
You didn't bring it because you smashed it last time.
I wish.
So I think the next thing we just sort of touched on was with the hand pumps. I think you guys have been one of a few venues that have really embraced the hand pumps in Sydney. How did that come about? And
like I said earlier, the guys from Young Henry's, and they asked me if they could put one in. And I'd never really used it before, and I think it's absolutely cracking. Like, I think the right beer on a hand pump is... it just takes it to another level. You know, and it's interesting because I think a lot of venues have them in there, but I think a lot of venues also perceive them as trouble and an issue. And like, quite often you'll walk into a pub that has a hand pump, and it's either not working or they've just not put something on there because it's just too difficult to deal with. But we've literally used it every day since we've had it in there. And I just think it's just another point of difference.
Yeah.
And even when we installed it, to the point where when they installed it, they wanted to install it quite low, and I was totally against. I was put it up high, because it's all about the theatre and the show.
Definitely. Hand pump as
well. Like, so, you know, and it's just a bit of a more of a customer experience. And and then when you try stuff through it, you know, like the Hightail, and it works, you're just like, you know, it's cracking.
When you had the Aurora Borealis one from it.
So, you know, and just those little things, it's like, you know, to have one beer on a hand pump or one on a normal tap and then flick one to a hand pump of the same beer, how it changes it.
Completely.
You know, because, I mean, the hand pump just... has CO2 on it just to balance out the keg. So it's the beer. It is what it is. Like, there's no nitrogen or anything involved in it. It's a lot more, like, you just a lot less carbonisation, and just you can get on it.
Better temperature.
Yeah. You know, you can't hide a bad beer on a hamper.
No. There's no <way. laughs> And how do you think the customers' uptake on the hand pumps have been?
I think really good. You know, one of our staples on the hand pump is, like, you know, Young Henry's Reel, which, you know...
Built for a hand pump.
Yeah, the award-winning. Richard won an award for that overseas a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, a little bit lower alcohol, a little bit more English style.
Yeah.
Like, especially coming into the colder months, it's going to... It's going to really... come into its own type thing. And I guess that's the other thing that's been a little bit interesting for our punters is Australians are used to drinking super, super cold beer, whereas now, you know, we've never had ice on our fonts and stuff, and we just keep raising the temperature a little bit more, and people get used to it. And it's like they actually get, you know, the full flavour of beer, where I think, you know, the hand pump does that straight off the bat.
Yeah.
No, it's good though. Like, I think you'll see more and more, and... you know, interesting to speak to the guys from, you know, like 2 meter tall in Tassie. Their tasting bar at their brewery is 12 hand pumps.
Really?
They don't even have a normal tap.
Wow.
So, like, you know, and he does a lot of crazy weird sours and stuff like that. But, you know, if he can get away with a whole tasting bar of hand pumps. And the other one is the Wigan Pen in Canberra. They've had 12 hand pumps plus for, you know, 15 years. So, like, you know, have they been ahead of the trend? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, 15 years.
Definitely.
I think Richard was making the hand pumps at some point. Watkins from...
I don't know if he was from...
He's importing them, I think.
Yeah, oh, he's importing them. Yeah.
He was making them. That would have been pretty impressive.
So,
still only, like, one or two, like... It's, like, one main brand, basically.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny because I was... Last year when I went to Italy, and I went to this bar in Rome for Bar 420, they had 12 hand pumps. They had not a single thing on their hand pumps. That's my best Australian thing. Nothing.
Man, it's just not even a cider. Wow.
Just pull it out. You're not going to
eat it. Yeah, exactly.
Just don't waste your space.
Sell it to somebody else or you.
Yeah.
Can you talk us a little bit... talk us through a little bit about the Bamboo restaurant and the evolution of the food menu here.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, well, that was how originally we I was leasing the restaurant space here. Yeah. Bamboo was something, a little dumpling bar that I started off the back of working for Keystone, because I ran the night noodle markets in Hyde Park for 5 years.
Oh, wow.
And sort of took it from Lady Macquarie's chair to Hyde Park where it is now. And now they do, you know, they run for 3 weeks and do 15,000 people. And I was like, if all these people are actually eating like dumplings and yum cha and stuff at night,
yeah,
well, why is there not
a restaurant? Only for 3 weeks.
Right? Yeah. And, you know, and we wanted to westernize a little bit in the way that, you know, we just wanted good fun music and, you know, a good fun environment and be able to drink good beer.
Yeah.
And then so we found this space in this pub and I was renting the space, and then that was what led us into obviously being able to buy the pub as well. But, you know, it was just, yeah, that was basically our mentality, was that dumpling, shared food, craft beer, and we were like, yeah, it's a good fit. Mm. And then sort of the menus evolved from there, where it's like, as much as we love the dumplings, it's also, it cut us off a little bit in the bar.
Yeah.
Because some people just flat out don't want to eat dumplings all the time.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, obviously the natural progression for us was more of a pub style menu, but we just decided to like stay with burgers, obviously the Royal Albert cheese. And the Fat Albert dog was just, and that's, you know, and that's pretty much where it'll stay. I don't, you know, we won't be doing anything else really as far as that. We'll do a few variations of the burger. But you know, it just works well. So, you know, if someone feels like a plate of dumplings, they can still have it, you know, because we've built our reputation on that.
Yeah.
And then, but they can obviously have a burger as well. So
about dumpling burgers.
Yeah, we could try with the beer. I think it's probably a bit of a carb over there. But you know, and then yeah, hence us. So that's what we'll be taking to Albury as well. So we're opening a new bamboo dumpling bar. But it'll be a dumpling bar totally focused on craft beer. Wow. So eight taps, you know, fairly big bottle list.
Yeah.
And doing it in regional New South Wales to give it a go.
Yeah.
You know, there's basically only one tap of craft in Albury at the moment. So.
Wow. What is it?
It's Bridge Road, Bridge Pale Road. Ale, oh, wow. One of the big pubs. So but he's only just down the road. So, yeah. You know, but to only have one tap out of 10 pub. Like, there is some other mainstream craft, like there is some Fat Yak and a few other bits and pieces around, but actual boutique, small craft, there's nothing at all, which is quite weird because in that surrounding area is...
Some great wine regions.
You've got Bridge Road, you've got Bright, Holgate's not that far away, Wagga's not that far away with Thirsty Crow.
Yeah.
It's insane that they've got all these amazing breweries and no taps.
You don't see much in Sydney that they...
So, so it'll be interesting to test the market. So, we'll see what happens. So.
Awesome.
That's exciting news for our Albury listeners.
Yeah.
Do we have any? I don't know.
I'm sure they'll let you know.
Let us know if anyone...
It's an excuse for a road trip, I guess.
Yeah. It's on the way to Melbourne. Yeah. Melbourne crap.
Actually,
it could be like coming up.
If you guys are into skiing and snowboarding. Like, I'm not sure if we'll even get to the snow if we stop
by. Yeah, snow might not be a good idea. Something else I wanted to talk about was... because you got a few plans for the bar. You mentioned you got some more taps coming in.
Yeah, so we're going from, we've got 8 taps at the moment, so we're putting in another 4.
Yeah.
And possibly another, depending on how that rolls out and how much space we've got left in the keg fridge downstairs. But, because it's like, you know, the other thing with craft is a lot of people don't refrigerate everything, and that's just, you've got to have everything refrigerated, so... super important to keep all that under control, but so we'll see how much room we've got left, and I wouldn't mind going another hand pump or two, but you know, it just depends on how it rolls out. So. But I think 14 taps will be enough for our little venue for the moment. So.
Our producer was shaking his head. It's not enough.
I saw you got a pretty cool review in Time Out.
Yeah, it was good.
Dodgy score, though, I thought.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, the judges will reveal their scores. Todd McKenney.
3.
I think...
The score matched the words.
Yeah, the words were great.
Yeah.
It did hit the venue on the head. Like, it just absolutely...
Summed it up pretty well.
Yeah, I think it summed it up totally well. Like, I guess we probably lost a few little points for the dumplings being a little bit overpriced, but you know, we are in Surrey Hills, you know, we've got bills to pay.
The rent must be pretty high.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, it's...
too damn high.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, I'm happy to take that one on the chin, but yeah. It's still a good review. And the thing is, you know, I've heard of other publicans after a timeout review, you know, literally selling 90 burgers a week.
Yeah.
After a timeout review, doing 290. So
yeah.
There's obviously a lot of readers out there.
Yeah.
So, and people do, you know,
read it.
It. Absolutely. So, you know, as a business owner, it's good regardless. I mean, it's just good to be in there as well. So
yeah. So
we might move on to another beer.
Yeah, it hasn't been poured yet, but we just opened it, and this is actually kind of appropriate because I think it's been about a year since
this will be our birthday episode. Yeah. I think
so. I brought along a 15th anniversary beer from the US.
You weren't going to save this for our 15th anniversary?
I couldn't wait.
What would drips go on the birthday?
So this is brewed by.
I think that's yours. Yeah.
This is brewed by a brewery well known for their imperial stout called 50/50.
Whereabouts is 50/50
from? Shit. I should have looked this up. California somewhere? It says California there, right?
Yeah. Good save.
Yeah.
Truckee.
So they're well known for their Eclipse series where they age the Imperial Stout in different bourbon barrels, for example, Elijah Wood or... And Healthy Spirits is a bottle shop in San Francisco, very well-regarded one, and they've been open for 15 years, so these guys brewed a beer especially for them. It's a blend of a barley wine and a porter aged in bourbon barrels.
Probably dually.
So, so I'm going to note that it's not even 10:30. And
geez, I'm surprised it's only 12%.
It's only 12%.
Yes, that is tasty.
Yeah.
Definitely quite smart.
I think it's also kind of appropriate for this episode because over the last year, the Royal Albert has kind of become a prominent craft beer bar. Like you said, you've been doing it for about 3 years now, but it only really got on people's radars in the past year or so.
Yeah, people don't realise how long it takes.
Yeah.
The first time I remember was like a Montes tap takeover.
Montes?
Yeah.
Was that one of the first?
I don't think so. Yeah, I just think that was probably one that we made a little bit more of a song and dance about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, obviously Montes is not not the most boutique craft thing in New Zealand, but they did do that. That was their launch of their Brewers series and stuff.
So the Imperial Pilsner.
Yeah, well, they'd reopened Greymouth.
Yeah.
And that's why they wanted to do a tap takeover with us, because it was like, you know, they obviously knew we were doing craft, but they'd also released a Brewer series out of Greymouth again.
Yeah.
And I think that's where Montes roots came from. And I think it's a bit, you know, it's a little bit the same with Little Creatures. Like, it'd be like
them, small batch.
Batch and deep, you know, really good quality, well-made beer. You know, and the big boys can still do it.
When they want to, they can.
Yeah.
You know, so, which is good. And I think you're going to probably see a bit more of that as well. Because they know that if they don't keep up their game, that they will lose market share.
Yeah.
I have no doubt.
So I think it'd be wrong of us to, you know, have this chat with you being the centre of the city and not talk about our state's great licensing laws. So I just wanted, you know, we've been about a month or two into the changes. What have you seen? Have you noticed anything different here?
Yeah, I wouldn't say different here, but I've heard different bits and pieces. There's a couple of scenarios with that. Obviously, the one that has affected us is the bottle shop one. I mean, not that we did a lot of bottle shop sales between 10 and 12.
But they had that option, was nice.
But it was a convenience for our locals. Yeah. If they could come and get a craft beer or they can get a bottle of wine. Like, we weren't selling, you know, flagons of wines to 18-year-old kids. Like, we don't even stock that. So it didn't really affect us. But obviously there's some people up on Oxford Street that would be hugely down on revenue and bottle shops and stuff like that, which would be hurting quite badly. But so it didn't really affect us. I guess even the late night, the second part of that is obviously the late night trading, again, which doesn't really affect us because we're only licensed till midnight. But the talk around town is what's happening is there's a huge shift in, it might not be around the Cross and Oxford Street, but places like Newtown, Bondi, the casino, Coogee, that have all still got late night licenses and don't have these lockout rules, is a lot of that crowd
shifting out.
Is shifting out. So I think I couldn't say for sure, but I think if you spoke to a few people that are running late night venues in Newtown, I reckon their demographics changed.
Yeah.
So, you know, in 6 months' time, it'll be interesting to see what everyone happens. But, you know, there's a 2-year no change clause essentially at the moment. So, you know, there's not going to be any.
Ridiculous.
Have you noticed the different, maybe not so much in this part of the city, but a different vibe? Like, I don't know. I mean, I don't hang around George Street at fucking 2 o'clock on a Saturday or something.
Yeah, I mean, neither do I.
I did recently, and it was bit like militant, actually. It's different.
I think we are sort of coming a little bit of a nanny state in that respect, because I think it's, as we all know, it's like, you know, everyone should take responsibility for their own actions.
Yeah.
You know, and I find it really a little bit unfair that if you were at dinner with friends at a BYO restaurant and you wanted some craft beer or you wanted a bottle of wine and it was after 10 o'clock,
you're out of luck.
Yeah. You're out of luck. Done. And I find that a little bit difficult to cop on the chin, because it's like, why should I be penalised? You know, I mean, I understand that there's a major issue with violence and stuff like that in those late night precincts, and, you know, and people getting hurt or even killed. But it's, should everyone be penalised?
Yeah.
You know, I find that a bit unfair. You know, it'd be like everyone saying, oh, I drink out of plastic.
But yeah.
Imagine drinking craft beer or wine in a really nice bar or restaurant or a pub out of plastic. Like, come on, that's not fair.
Yeah.
No,
it's just, because that doesn't happen in Sydney. Yeah.
But obviously some venues have already got that.
Yeah. Still waiting for the first plastic glass. Yeah. Build a shoe. So.
But yeah, so, you know, look, hopefully it doesn't change the face of Sydney too much, but, you know, when you go to other cities around the world and, you know, New York and anywhere in Europe, and you can, you know, go to awesome bars and do whatever till late night, it's like all of a sudden it's like Sydney's done by 1:30.
So. Yeah. Kind of embarrassing, actually, isn't it?
It sort of is a little bit.
Yeah.
Hang on. But, yeah, unfortunately, or lucky for us, I guess it doesn't really affect us because midnight's not so bad. Yeah.
Right, well, I think we might wrap it up. I'm sure you got lots of shit to do today.
Yeah. Monday morning, just, you know, bit of ordering, timesheets, bit of paperwork.
So might sip on this beer for a while. It's pretty damn good. Yeah, I have to say.
Very, very smooth for something so big. It doesn't have the alcohol punch of the last beer.
On the nose, it definitely it smells like it's going to hit your end a bit, but it's actually like velvety and...
I was going to save this for a while because I read a review saying, like, it's super sweet and, like, not in a good way, but...
I think it's really tasty. It's
really nice.
I think it's
good. I'm glad I brought it along. You can definitely get the barley wine notes in the nose.
Yeah.
And, but it's just, it's not super sweet on the tongue or anything. It's just really smooth.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much.
Cheers. Mate. No worries, boys. It's nice to have you guys down here again.
Done well for getting us out of bed at 9:30 in the morning.
Well, originally it was later, and you guys brought it forward.
Oh, my God. Is that what happened? Right. He put it on you, but hey.
Tom's fault.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Cheers, boys.
Yeah, cheers, mate.
Thanks for bringing the beers.
Oh, anytime. Cheers. It's a first, isn't it?